Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and do all the things, because that's what you do when you go online. You click lots of buttons. Also, get your stuff at StuDoesMerch.com. Shirts and mugs and stickers and all the rest. Code is Stu10. You'll save 10% off of your order. We're going to tell you about electric vehicles in China. Lauren Fix is going to be here with us. We've got some delicious updates on the California failure of a train system, which is just a disaster. We're going to start by doing the media's overblown D.C. crisis. They're all fired up. Did you know there's going to be troops on the streets with guns? Yes, it's happening in our nation's capital. National Guard patrols begin to carry weapons in D.C. So what's the background of this? Well, Major Michael A. Maxwell said that the change was directed by Pete Hegseth on Friday. Officials said Hegseth authorized Guard members to carry their weapons, though without giving specifics on how often members would be armed as they walked through the city. Major Maxwell emphasized that service members would operate under established rules for the use of force, employing it only as a last resort and solely in response to an imminent threat of death or serious bodily harm. I mean, what's the other side of this argument? They should just stand there and get murdered. Like, what are they supposed to do? They should have guns, so if they are going to be attacked, like, you know, most liberals are telling their constituents to do, maybe it would be good if they could defend themselves. I know it's a shocking thing. More than 2,200 Guard troops were deployed in Washington as of Sunday, including about 900 D.C. members and others from Louisiana, Mississippi, Ohio, South Carolina, Tennessee, and West Virginia. Mr. Trump ordered the deployment of troops in Washington 2 weeks ago, saying they would help an array of federal agents to crack down on crime in the city. Now, of course, this did not, you know, the calming words from the people in charge saying, we're not really going to use these unless there's a real emergency, that didn't calm down the media. And they framed it a certain way, right? Like, it's this evil sort of crackdown on the city. It's always kind of tilted that way. For example, some National Guard units in Washington are now carrying firearms, an escalation of Trump deployment. National Guard troops now armed in D.C. as Trump threatens Chicago and Baltimore deployments. National Guard troops on D.C. streets for Trump's crackdown will start carrying guns. Some National Guard units in Washington are now carrying firearms, an escalation of Trump deployment. You've got some National Guard troops in D.C. now armed as Trump takeover continues. Now, the other headline you should probably know about all of this is this one. Incredible results. Trump thanks National Guard and police for patrolling D.C. And that's kind of what we're seeing here. This shouldn't surprise anybody, of course, when you actually pay attention to these areas and try to stop crime. It tends to work. And that's not a huge surprise. J.D. Vance was talking about this. Watch.
Just to echo something the president said about crime in Washington, D.C., this is the national capital of the greatest nation in the world, and we had murder rates just a few weeks ago that rivaled some of the worst third world cities anywhere, even in very, very poor regions of the world. Why did we accept that? Why did we allow it to happen? We allowed it to happen because we had broken leadership in Washington, D.C., and unfortunately sitting behind the Resolute desk. What we have shown in just under 2 weeks of taking law enforcement seriously is that the American people can have their streets back if their leadership is willing to put in the time and the resources. Mr. President, you've shown in Washington, D.C. that we can have safe streets again. We've just got to have the political willpower to focus on the bad guys and to give the American people back their communities. We are focused on doing that thanks to the president's leadership.
I'm going to do the rest of the show standing behind this chair while someone else sits in it. That's how I want. I want to do all communication that way from now on. Just my preference, okay? By the way, what does this mean? You probably heard some of the stats. There's massive drops in, you know, carjacking and, you know, zero murders since they started over. I mean, like, they keep saying that like it's this wonderful thing, and it is. But, like, it doesn't feel like a brag. We've had zero murders in a week. Like, I, whoa, it really shouldn't be that big of a deal, but it is. D.C. Also is going after these homeless encampments, which is a big issue in city after city across the country. I mean, yeah, you go back, and I don't know, if you happen to live in the middle of the country, if you happen to live in a sane area, a suburb, a nice area, just a quiet, small town, you might not be familiar with what the cities look like at this point. I was in San Francisco a while ago, and granted, San Francisco is probably the worst example of this, though there are plenty of others. And it is just, it's insane. It is perplexing that this stuff can even go on. Tent cities right on the main, you know, on main passageways. I wish I could describe to you the smells of these areas. I mean, it's the worst you'll ever smell, the worst thing you'll ever smell. And you can take a guess, a gander, as to what that might be. But they are doing something about that in D.C., where they have specific tools to be able to do about this. We're in a 30-day period here where Trump can go in there and really crack down on all of this stuff, escalate it. He can do a takedown of the city. He has all the legal rights in the world to be able to do that in Washington, D.C. D.C. dismantled in a week the homeless encampments California's endured for decades. A couple of the photos from this effort, you see like these big, you know, people put out outhouses and tents and structures and all sorts of different things. Well, it's bulldozing them, and they're putting them in the back of garbage trucks because they're not supposed to be there. It's illegal for them to be there. And if you care about your city, if you care about the people who live there, you realize that, number one, that's not much of a life. It's not the way it's supposed to be. It's also illegal. And secondarily, it causes a terrible situation for everyone else who lives there. So doing something about a crime, good. By the way, you can quote, if you happen to be like the mayor of Chicago, you can just take that policy. It's yours. Doing something about crime, good. Just work from that starting point, and you might get somewhere really productive. Of course, Trump is feuding with the mayor of Chicago, who is, you know, absolutely incompetent and terrible. Trump knocks incompetent Chicago mayor amid threats to deploy troops to the city. Here's what he said. The incompetent mayor of Chicago just stated that in D.C., where crime has been brought down to almost nothing, there have been no murders in 9 days, something that which hasn't happened in years. Quite a statement. The people are safe again. Only 9 people have been arrested. That is wrong. Hundreds of criminals have been held, captured, and arrested, and their guns have been taken away. D.C. is safe and booming. And normally when you say D.C. is booming, it's because of, you know, maybe a bomb. But no, here it's actually positive. The Chicago mayor, of course, firing back. And there's just this, you know, we've talked about this incentive structure for a few weeks now, over and over and over again. Hardcore Democrats are incentivized to go farther left to fight with Trump because it helps them with clicks. It helps them with attention. It helps them get books on shows. It helps them fundraise. It helps them in every way other than helping the actual constituents of the city. Chicago mayor on Trump troop threat. He says, "We will not bend or cower." Here he is talking about this. This guy's, again, like a socialist, and he's terrible, but here's what he said.
And so, you know, look, we're going to remain firm. We'll take legal action. But the people in this city are accustomed to rising up against tyranny.
Oh.
And if that's necessary, I believe that the people of Chicago will stand firm alongside of me as I work every single day to protect the people of this city.
Oh, yeah. Rise up against tyranny. What a wonderful message to send to the people of your city. When they're talking about law enforcement possibly arriving. Maybe that's not the way to promote something like that. And I think one interesting part about this is really stepping back and saying, what are they insinuating here? I mean, how do you stand up against tyranny? I mean, they are insinuating that you do something physical. Sure, it might just be protesting. I'm sure that's what they would fall back on. But man, it sounds like standing up to tyranny. Well, you stand up to tyranny oftentimes through justified violence, right? I mean, that's what we did in 1776, right? That's, you know, what people were doing in the streets of Iran years ago. This is what you do. And they keep hinting at it without actually saying it. But it seems to be quite clear what they want people to do. Jeffries, this is Hakeem Jeffries, panning the idea of dispatching National Guard to Chicago. And I will say, there is some reason to be a little sympathetic to that view. As I said, in Washington, D.C., you do have specific types of rights as the president of the United States to crack down on crime in that city. You can escalate your crackdown in D.C. pretty easily, legally. In other cities, it's a lot more gray. And there are ways you can do it. You can try to go through, several acts, that, like the one they used in Los Angeles is one of them. But, then, you know, from the 1800s, they've only been used a few times. It's supposed to only be used in emergencies. Certainly, you can make an argument that all these murders that go on in these cities constitutes an emergency. But you do have to step back and wonder what this power looks like in anyone else's hands. You know, it's a little scary where this could lead to. But of course, it's also scary walking through these cities, so I understand the motivation at the very least. Here's Hakeem Jeffries talking about it.
We should continue to support local law enforcement and not simply allow Donald Trump to play games with the lives of the American people as part of his effort to manufacture a crisis and create a distraction because he's deeply unpopular. This is not about the American people. The American people understandably want safer communities. As Democrats, we want safer communities. We want to continue to make sure that crime can go down as it's doing in Chicago, in New York, in Washington, D.C., and other places.
Yeah, sure. It's down to what? Down to high? Down to extremely high? Down to unbelievably high? The rates are still very, very high in most of these cities, and that's the problem. You know, the idea that this is an effort just to create a distraction and manufacture a crisis is, I think, really bad messaging for the Democrats outside of just it being wrong. Obviously, what they say is wrong almost all the time. But the messaging, I don't think, is going to be effective here. It's not manufacturing a crisis to say that crime rates are way too high in our cities. This is just, everyone knows it. You keep trying to convince people that these things that they know are true are not true. And that usually the American people don't fall for that, at least for long. It could work in a highly politicized environment. Maybe it's just about locking up your base. And it could work in that way, maybe. But it's a really strange strategy to try. People know. You know, they're not idiots. They know what it's like. It doesn't mean that they can't have a good experience in a city. They can't go see a concert or have dinner and everything go okay. They know that most of the time it will. But they also know they're not going to those areas all that often. It's the people in those areas that continue to suffer and deal with areas that are just absolutely swarmed by crime. And that is the fault of, in almost every single case, Democratic mayors and Democratic people who have been put in by, you know, organizations like George Soros has been going with, these DAs that are letting every criminal they do catch off out in the streets again to commit more crimes. It's a real problem. Now, not everyone is incentivized the exact same way as someone like the mayor of Chicago is, who's just basically saying, like, I'm going to go as left as possible. Hopefully, you know, AOC will hug me behind, you know, backstage when I'm done with this. There's also another incentive. President of the United States is coming up. There's a race in 2028. People are starting to position themselves. One person who is spending a lot of time positioning himself is Rahm Emanuel, who's attempting to walk this line as the quote-unquote sane Democrat. That's his pitch right now. He's going on moderate and sometimes right-wing even podcasts trying to pitch himself as this, like, moderate good guy who, sure, he leans left on some things, but, you know, he's not crazy. He's not going to, like, boys playing girls sports. He's certainly not going to let crime on the streets just go run rampant. Now, of course, it was pretty bad in Chicago when he was mayor there, too. But he says, partner with us, Rahm Emanuel, on potential National Guard deployment to Chicago. He's trying to say, look, let's work together here, right? We're not rejecting you like the mayor of Chicago is. He's saying, oh, we can work together. We can get some things done. Is that accurate? Well, of course, as soon as Trump starts doing things, these will get branded as fascist tactics. But that's the way this works. Trump is threatening now to send the military to Baltimore as well to clean up the crime. I'll give you part of this truth from Donald Trump. Governor Wes Moore of Maryland has asked in a rather nasty and provocative tone that I walk the streets of Maryland with him. I assume he's talking about out-of-control, crime-ridden Baltimore. As president, I would much prefer that he clean up his crime disaster before I go there for a walk. Westmore's record on crime is a very bad one, unless he fudges his figures on crime like many other blue states are doing. But if Westmore needs help, like Gavin Newsom did in L.A., I will send in the troops, which is being done nearby D.C. and can quickly clean up the crime. After only 1 week, there is no crime and no murder in D.C. I don't know if there's no crime, but at least there's been no murder so far. When it is like that in Baltimore, I will proudly walk the streets with the failing because of crime governor of Maryland. But Baltimore is the fourth worst city in the nation, blah, 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 blah. So you understand where he's going with that. There's going to be a fight there. And Wes Moore, again, is another person trying to position himself for 2028. He says the deployment of the National Guard to D.C. is deeply disrespectful to Guard members. Here's his just, you know, pathetic effort. This guy's supposed to be one of the Democratic, keep this in mind, he's supposed to be one of the Democratic, like, high risers. He's one of the young guns in the Democratic Party. This is one of the people you're supposed to know about for 2028 because he's so dynamic. Watch the dynamism.
Why, though, are you so opposed to this deployment?
Well, there's plenty of reasons. One, it is not sustainable. You cannot continue this type of pace of operations, particularly when it's costing over $1 million a day in order to do this. The second, it's not scalable. You're not going to be able to do this in every single major American city, particularly when many of the cities that have the highest crime rates are the places that have actually deployed their National Guards to Washington, D.C. So who's going to go do the work in their cities? The third, it's unconstitutional. It's a direct violation of the 10th Amendment, and for a party that talks about state rights, it's amazing how they're having such a big government approach in the way they're conducting public safety. The fourth reason is because it's deeply disrespectful to the members of the National Guard. You know, as someone who actually deployed overseas and served my country in combat, to ask these men and women to do a job that they're not trained for is just deeply disrespectful.
So that's what they have on the bench. I don't know. You look at that and you're worried about that? Worried about Wes Moore? Not all that impressive. Look, he has some arguments when it comes to how these things can be deployed outside of Washington, D.C. It has to be done correctly, if it can be done at all. It can't be done in every situation this way, but it is possible legally to do it in certain circumstances for limited periods of time. When he says it's not sustainable, well, you know, he's got 30 days. So, I mean, you'd hope that maybe the city would pick up some of these efforts and start sending police officers into these areas where most of the crime occurs. There's like a 10-block radius, which is responsible for a massive chunk of the crime going on in the city. You can go there and try to stop that as much as possible. I mean, it's risky. And if I was a police officer, I wouldn't want to do it. But it can really help the situation. And thank God many of our troops are engaging in those types of situations in these cities. Because what we can find here is something pretty obvious to most people, which is life in America is better when there is a rule of law. When you enforce the laws that we have, life gets better. When it comes to crime, that's pretty clear. It's amazing what you can do when you actually pay attention to a situation like this, when you actually designate some resources toward these situations to try to stop these crimes from happening before they do occur. And this is the thing. These poor people who've been living in these bad areas of these cities have had mayor after mayor after mayor after mayor, and Congress after Congress after Congress after Congress, and president after president after president and president, who has maybe said some lip service about what's going on in their communities. They've done nothing. Nothing successful. They've basically the strategy has been in a lot of these cities is make the nice downtown area where the shopping is and the fancy stores are and the football stadiums are, make those areas acceptable to people, because that's where the people from around the state are coming when they come to the city, and then kind of cordon off in a skid row type fashion a bunch of blocks where we just let everything go. It's basically the purge on a day-to-day basis. Let them all kill themselves, and then we'll just do our press conferences in the nice areas. That's Chicago, that's D.C., that's a lot of these cities. It's also tragic for the people who are living in these terrible areas. For the first time in a lot of these people's lives in Washington, D.C., someone seems to actually care about their community. Someone is doing something to help them. Now, Trump wants to do this all over the country. It's unclear whether he can actually do that. We have to see what his legal arguments are. whether we have the resources to do it. There are lines here, and they're important lines. I will say, I am not in the camp. I get that most people are these days. I get that. I'm not in the camp where you just blow off process and just do whatever you want because it's, you know, quote unquote, the right thing to do, or, you know what time it is, or whatever the argument is. I understand it. I understand the feeling. I understand and appreciate the motivation. But we do have a constitutional republic here. And, you know, look, I don't want to be the one that's not respecting it. I get that the other side doesn't respect it that often. I complain about that. And I don't want to do the same things of the people that I complain about all the time. You know, it's just how I feel. And I think, you know, there's one thing of doing what you can within legal boundaries and pushing that envelope a little bit. I think that's what's happening in D.C. here. And I think that's the appropriate thing to do. Breaking rules, you know, manufacturing false lines. I don't want to get into that. I hope that's not where the president goes. I don't think he will. But it's a line that all of us have to watch a little bit. This is an issue where we can make a real difference by people caring. It doesn't have to be the federal government. In fact, as a guy who really wants a small federal government with limited power, I would hope that it's not. Right. I would hope that these cities and states would actually do these things in their own cities and states to make them better because they cared about their constituents. That doesn't seem to be what's going on so far. But maybe the president in Washington, D.C., if we can get the results that we're hoping for, can shame some of these states into actually doing something for the people they're supposed to serve. Fall is the perfect time to plant, and with fast-growing trees, you don't need a green thumb to make it happen. Instead of driving from nursery to nursery, only to find limited options or a bunch of dead junk, you can order from their huge selection online and have them delivered right to your door. They've got everything from fruit trees to privacy hedges to vibrant flowering plants, all locally grown in the U.S. Every order comes with their Alive and Thrive guarantee, plus care instructions and the fast-growing trees plant experts, they're great. They know what they're doing. They're always just a call or a click away with personalized advice for your plant's care. So, you know, you can't really screw it up, which is nice. The fall, they've got a bunch of stuff coming up here in the fall. Best deals for your yard, up to half off the select plants and other deals. And viewers of this particular program get 15% off their first purchase when you use the code STEW at checkout. It's 15% off fastgrowingtrees.com. Use the code STEW at checkout. It's the perfect time to plant. Use the code STEW to save today. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Check out the website below or click the link in the show's notes. It's fastgrowingtrees.com.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
I'm happy to welcome Lauren Fix back to the program. She's an automotive expert and journalist, host of the Total Car Score podcast, and she also has a brand new piece out for Blaze Media's Align. It's why states are quietly moving to restrict how much you drive, which is very disturbing. I want to get to that here in a second. Lauren, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Well, thanks for having me back. Yeah, it's a lot of interesting states have started to maybe take over rules for themselves because they didn't like that the federal government didn't stand behind their obtuse rules, shall I put it nicely.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. I mean, of course, this has been, I want to get to that story here in a second, but this has been the purview of the federal government for a while now to encourage people to drive less, apparently to tell us what cars to buy, what cars not to buy. One of the ways they do that is with economic incentives, and they have had this giant tax credit for electric vehicles that has been going on for a long time. I mean, it's certainly part of the reason why the industry even exists at this point. However, that's going kapoof in just a couple of weeks, really. It's in September. So what goes away here, and what is this going to do to the industry?
okay, as of September 30th, that $7,500 tax credit, which is your tax dollars, is going away. And what that means is if you're wishing to purchase an electric car, now is the time to do so. And the reason for that is because you're not going to get any tax credit at all. Some states are still offering tax credits, such as California, New York, but they're also running out of funds. California's run out of funds multiple times, New Jersey and New York, and so they may give you an extra $2,000. Again, this is a tax credit, so if you owe more than $2,000 in state taxes, you would get the credit. That's not a check to you. That's not a discount on the price, and that $7,500 is the same thing. But if you make more than a certain amount of money, again, you got to check with your accountant or joint filing, then you wouldn't be eligible. And so these are huge issues that manufacturers are living with, because without that tax credit, I expect the sales of electric vehicles to drop below 4% and maybe eventually get even lower. And the reason for that is if it's not incentivized, people don't want it. And currently, the way it's incentivized, it only helps people that make a lot of money.
What is the percentage right now for electric vehicles in the market?
It's about 6%. And we're talking about the United States, and Canada also has the same issue. They're going to get rid of their federal tax credit because it doesn't make sense. In Europe, it's a whole nother animal. There's tons of incentives, and they actually tax people for not purchasing electric vehicles. So if you have an older gasoline-powered car, like you live in the UK, they are nailing you with thousands of dollars a year just to drive the vehicle that you own. And I'm sure they would have loved to bring that here, but with President Trump, that is not going to happen.
No, we've got at least a few years before that's going to be broken up. What happens? So, you know, down to 4%. You know, we've already seen, you know, Tesla, like, seems to be desperately trying to get cars out the door right now. They just started a lease program of used vehicles in Texas and California, where they're advertising really low rates, although it doesn't seem like they're actually giving them. It's a whole other story. Where does this put Tesla? Where does this put these other automakers?
Well, Tesla's a different situation. Currently, Elon Musk owns about 60% of the electric car market. So that's good for them. So even if this tax credit goes away, Tesla's not going anywhere. People that love the brand, love the way he sells cars, loves the vehicles. There are so many people that are loyal to the brand. Those people will probably remain. On a used car side, I wouldn't buy a used electric vehicle. Personally, it's like buying a used phone. You don't know what you're getting. On the other hand, as far as other brands, some brands will do well. I think a Hyundai will come in. They're already saying with the Hyundai and Kia, will have the Kona EV. They'll have the smaller EVs for those people that want them. Ford will sell the Mach-E as long as they can. And the Lightning truck, well, we know there's going to be a lot less of those. And Ford, on one hand, like GM, said, we're going to build what people want. We're going to build gas-powered vehicles. But on the other hand, they're like, well, we're not really letting go of EVs. It's almost like they're afraid the government's going to change their mind. And that is not the case in this particular case. Taking away that electric vehicle mandate was huge. It was Lee Zeldin. He worked with a bunch of other people internally, including President Trump. That is signed. That is done. There will no longer be any way to have a federal mandate in the future. So we won't see that in the future administration. It would be almost impossible to remove the EV mandate, that taking it away. And I've also done articles on that, which I believe is also on the line. So it's important to note that if you do own an electric vehicle and you love it, that's great. You should be able to drive and choose what you want. But note that that tax credit for the installing the charging system in your home goes away at the end of the year. So it's $1,200 currently. That will go away permanently on the end of this year. So something to think about.
You had mentioned the Tesla owning 60% of the market. And you're talking about the American market, right? What's fascinating, I think, about this is the China's role in all of this. Now, it's not going to be a massive factor here in the United States because we have huge tariffs on these. And in a way, I was thinking about, like, this is not the exact same thing, but like back in the day, there would be like this, like the Soviet Union, for example, didn't let any products in from the United States. And I used to marvel at like how they weren't aware of like our basic things, the cool stuff we had in the United States, because they wouldn't import anything. We're kind of like that with China and EVs in that, not that they're high quality, but they do have now, the BYD is the largest EV manufacturer in the world when it comes to the world.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
There was a story I saw recently, I think it was just like a YouTube video from a guy who went to China and saying now that they now have 5-minute chargers in China that they're starting to churn out. That could get you for, I think, up to like 60% in 5 minutes. Is this the type of thing that we keep like talking about? Oh, we're gonna have EVs here. We're sort of like ignoring the Chinese market and we're being pushed behind, or is this just hype from China?
It's hype from China. There's a whole bunch of things you said there that are really important to note. You do not want to be in a car that's on a super fast charger like that, that charges that quickly. If you've ever felt the heat from a contact charger, like you put your phone on one of those wireless chargers and you put it down, how hot that gets. Imagine how hot your car would get inside with that type of quick charging. You'd be looking at what they call 440, which is super fast charging. You'd also probably fry yourself or your animals or your children who are in the car. So that would not be wise. And again, China has different laws and regulations than we do here in the US. I can't imagine that that would be allowed by the federal government. You can make anything. That doesn't mean you can make a concrete life preserver. That doesn't mean it's a great idea. And so they do have like companies like NIO where you can do replaceable batteries. They've had a few issues with that. We can pull out the battery and put in a new battery. That might be a future issue that might work. I think the big problem with the Chinese cars, which, by the way, are not allowed in Canada either. There's a 100% tariff in Canada as well as the U.S., so you'll never see them here. And I've driven a few of them. They're actually quite interesting, and I've reviewed a few of them when I get the opportunity because it's kind of neat to see what they're like. They're far from the quality of what we offer, but they've really stepped up their game. But remember, China's whole goal was they could not beat us in the gasoline-powered market. They tried, they couldn't. So instead, they created these electric cars, and they own all the mines, at least not in the U.S., but across the world, that make all the minerals that we need in order for to get these batteries. So that's a great way to say everyone should have electric cars. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, while they're saying this, they're also putting up nuclear power plants. They're putting in gas stations everywhere. They've got tons of power available because they're using so much of it. Here in the U.S., we have genius governors like in New York and California that are shutting down nuclear power plants, don't want gas being produced in their state or refined. And the result is we as residents, and I live in New York State, are paying crazy numbers for electricity. My personal electric bill has doubled just this year. And I'm in darkness now and I'm still getting tons of bills. I mean, it's crazy. Gasoline prices are higher. And that's what they originally planned, was to get you dedicated on to electric and then keep raising the prices and eventually go, I can't drive. And it's about control, 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 which is what China loves to do to their people. We don't want that here.
I would agree with that sentiment exactly. And it's the sentiment that you are addressing in your latest piece in a line. It's called Why States Are Quietly Moving to Restrict How Much You Drive. Now, I am of the opinion that we're supposed to be able to go wherever we want to go in the United States. We're supposed to have freedoms here. This is the whole concept of the nation. Federal government doesn't agree with me all that much, and neither does do these state governments, especially in blue states. What are they trying to do to restrict people's driving?
Well, this is interesting. So the federal government is, at least under this administration, would not want to restrict your driving. But states like Massachusetts, Minnesota, Colorado, Oregon, New York, New Jersey, California, and Washington, the usual suspects, are starting to put little legislation in place. And it's very creatively worded. They're not saying we're going to restrict your driving. What they do is, like in Massachusetts, Senate Bill S-2246, which Majority Leader Cynthia Cream put in place, is talking about limiting mileage based on, they can say it's pollution, they can say it's road use, they're calling it vehicle mileage taxes, so they're going to tax you one way or the other. And part of this restriction, and by the way, this is already through the legislation, this could be voted in place, and those that live in the state of Massachusetts that are watching really want to pay attention to this, because if this goes through, it starts with, oh, no, we're just monitoring your mileage to, no, if you go over this mileage, like some countries are doing, we're going to make it so you can't drive your car, or make it so expensive that you can't. In some other countries, they're already limiting your air miles. So if you travel for work, like I do and you do, they're not going to let you do that. If you're an on-the-road salesperson and you have to drive those miles, how are you supposed to do your job? Interesting. This is something they never think about. Very typical legislation. Let's just make the rule and then we'll figure out how to adjust it accordingly.
Well, I mean, look, we saw how well the homeschooling worked during COVID. We could just do Zoom calls and everything will turn out fine, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Lauren Fix, automotive expert and host of the Total Car Score podcast. Be sure to check her out and her new piece over at the Blaze Media's Align. It is why states are quietly moving to restrict how much you drive. Lauren, I appreciate all this. It's a crazy time in the automobile industry. I appreciate your content here.
It is, and I'll be monitoring it and posting it on a line. Thanks. Right.
Thank you. In another episode of my favorite story, we've been talking about this story for more than a decade. Yes, it is the California bullet train, California's long-delayed bullet train, slated to run in the Central Valley by 2032. That sounds great. It was passed in 2008, so that's 24 years. It's supposed to be completely finished from San Francisco to Los Angeles by 2020. It was supposed to be done in like two and a half hours. That was part of the law, obviously being completely ignored now. Now it's going to like run between two smaller towns by 2032. So that's going pretty well. By the way, I should mention it's also $100 billion over budget. But other than that, things are going very, very swimmingly. Peachy? Great. By the way, it sounds like that's all bad news. I should give you the good news, too. They have they have hit a new milestone, new construction milestone. California's High-Speed Rail Authority has completed another key infrastructure element in the Central Valley, opening up the Avenue 88 grade separation in Tulare County. Is that Tulare County? I don't even know. New overpass, 485 feet. And it clears both State Route 43 and the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway line, as well as the corridor for future high-speed trains. So it's a bridge, basically a bridge to nowhere, but they finished it. So that's great. Also, California is on fire again. 7,000 acres are on fire in California wine country. Maybe this is the type of thing that would actually get Gavin Newsom interested in his state instead of tweeting all the time at Donald Trump. Because it's possible, maybe he could look at this and say, well, actually, that's the thing I care about, you know, elitist wine rather than the actual people's homes that are being destroyed. Maybe he would actually care about something like this. Mandatory evacuations are ordered. I mean, wouldn't you be so pissed off if you were in California? All this stuff keeps happening to your state. It's out of control. People in Malibu had their houses destroyed. They can't even get them rebuilt because of how terrible the state restrictions are so far. And Gavin Newsom's like, I'm going to put another tweet out there. I keep seeing people on the left be like, oh, the right hates this. Go, Gavin, go. The right doesn't hate it. They don't care about it at all. None of us care about Gavin Newsom. He's pathetic. And this idea that like we're so angry about it. And, the other one was they don't get it because they think he's really trying to be Donald Trump. Now, we get that he's trying to mock. Of course, this is what Donald Trump does, too. He's just trying to mock people all the time. We get that he's using those same attention grabbing tactics as Donald Trump. He's not trying to be Donald Trump. Regardless, like we just view it as pathetic. As I think anyone else would. Now, look, Gavin Newsom's done a lot of things that have been really damaging to his city, his state, his best friend's marriage. All the things that are you really try to do as a governor, he has done the opposite of over and over and over again. And he's been a catastrophe for the state. And people are like, well, he survived his recall. Wow. You had a recall that had him almost losing in a bright blue state, and you're like, wow, we are really, really good at what we're doing. This is a pathetic failure of a human being, but the whole goal here is, of course, not to appeal to the middle or to the right or to try to win a presidential election. A lot of people think that's what this is about. That's not what this is about. It's about winning a primary. It's about getting attention now so that he can try to pivot back to Gavin Newsom 7.5 or 8.3 or 2.4 or whatever one he thinks will work for him on that given day. That is the goal of all of this. But right now, what he needs is money and attention, and the stupid morons on the internet are happy to give it to him. All right, the weekend hits. Your listing lights up. Five offers in the inbox, all of them different. One's cash, one's with an escalation clause. Another is over asking price, but loaded with all sorts of weird contingencies. If you pick the wrong one, you're going to spend weeks in limbo. Glenn Beck saw too many sellers stuck in that mess. So he called and created realestateagentsitrust.com. He got in touch with his brother and a bunch of real estate agents, some of the best in the world. And he said, hey, what should we do here? They came up with a plan, realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a free service that connects you with full-time agents who know how to separate great offers from risky ones. They verify proof of funds. They weigh the appraisal gaps. They look at the inspection terms. They look past the headline price to the details that actually mean something when you're trying to sell your home. They also can line up a backup offer and keep timelines tight and negotiate so you don't have to worry about all the drama. These are agents that are vetted and experienced and local, and they protect your bottom line and your calendar. Because your time's really, really important here as well. If you're listing soon, start with someone who knows how to win the weekend and finish the deal. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. This is a free service to you, by the way. realestateagentsitrust.com.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
I talked about rising star Governor Wes Moore earlier on the program. He's looking into redistricting Maryland because, you know, that whole seat is just too much for the Republicans to have because they have won. This is it's amazing where this is going. Here is Wes Moore blabbering his way through yet another poor answer.
Are you actively looking at it now?
Yeah, because I think we have
you
to.
Are.
Yes, and I think we have to.
See, we have
because
to.
I think what's happened is this is what people hate about politics in the first
this
place.
Is, yes.
The president of the United States, very similar to what he did in Georgia, where he called up a series of voter registrants and said, I need you to find me more votes. We're watching
serious,
the same thing now where he's calling up legislatures around the country and saying, I need you to find me more congressional districts.
He's doing it. That may be different, but Democrats redistrict. You know this.
Yeah.
But Gavin Newsom's doing it right now. A few years ago in New York, we saw this. This can backfire. Do you really want to go down this road?
I want to make sure that we have fair lines and fair seats where we don't have situations where politicians are choosing voters, but that voters actually have a chance to choose their elected officials. We need to be able to have fair maps. And we
fair
also need
maps,
to sure
guys. All right, stop this guy. States. I can't take it anymore. It's too much Wes Moore in one program. Fair maps means no representation for Republicans, despite the fact that they're 35%, 40% of the vote in Maryland. They get nothing. Those are fair maps. Democrats have been doing this for years. Republicans are trying to push back. And look, there's a debate here, right? And what can you do? I would love it to be just four straight lines and make the blocks and move on. Let's keep it fair. It's not where we are. Democrats have already done this. Republicans got screwed in the census. They're trying to make that right. At this point, it's going to be full escalation and all-out war, and you should probably just maximize these red states, let them maximize their blue states, and we'll go from there and see where people are. That's all you can do, I suppose, at this point. We'll see how this develops. Mom Donnie in New York raising over $1 million in the latest New York City fundraising haul, drowning out Cuomo and Adams. And you might say that's bad news for Cuomo and Adams, but since Mom Donnie's a communist, he's going to equally distribute all of that wealth to the other candidates. So they should be pretty happy about that. Surely he's doing that. We'll report on that when it's done. And public schools are in a bind amid enrollment declines. This is a tough one because now school choice is out there, and that's pecking away at these public schools. People used to say, well, if you do that, then public schools are going to lose enrollment. Well, sure. That's what I'm hoping for, because they're terrible. Here's one thing you could do if you happen to be a public school. And I know there's some great public school teachers out there, some great administrators, some great schools in our country. But one approach that you can take if you're dealing with lower enrollment is to try not sucking all the time. And I mean that both in your performance academically. And I've also seen a lot of stories recently about teachers hooking up with their students. So all of it should just stop. Stay away from all that. And then maybe people will want to go to your school. If not, maybe just parents should be making the choice as to where they send their kids. Do you have issue 3 of Frontier Magazine from Blaze Media in your hands yet? No? Well, you got to get that fixed. It's blazeunlimited.com/Stu. Use the promo code BLAZE50. The first 50 subscribers are going to get $40 off and a special bonus, digital access to Frontier Issue 1 and Issue 2. So the full story is in your hands from the start. It's blazeunlimited.com. /Stu. The promo code is BLAZE50. All right, let me give you this. So here's what happened today. Is vegan firefighter's first blaze involves 40,000 pounds of steaks. Yes, vegan firefighter, first day on the job out there. I will say probably a really delicious smelling fire. Sadly, all of these steaks were a complete loss. Either that or Jeffy drove by and picked up a few in his mouth on his way home. One of the two. I will say, was this sabotage by the vegan? We don't know. Vegan sabotage, huge problem in this country. We'll get into that on tomorrow's episode.